Translation. The poetic champion was certainly most fortunate. His life was successful by dint of his vast learning and erudite scholarship, and thus he attained the shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Purport. One of the ladies there like to read it, seeing as how you're quite close.
Srinartham Das Thakur has sung that the best qualification for taking shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya is to be the most fallen, because the Lord came specifically to deliver the fallen soul. In this age, there are very few scholars. Almost everyone is a fallen meat eater, drunkard, woman hunter, or gambler. Such persons are never considered learned scholars, even if they pose as such, because these so-called scholars superficially see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu associates with the fallen souls. They think that he is meant for a lower class of men, but that they do not need him. Thus, such scholars do not take to the Krishna consciousness movement to be puffed up with false learning, therefore, is a disqualification for accepting the Krishna consciousness movement. But here is a special example, for although the poetic champion was a great learned scholar, the Lord also favored him because of his humble submission.
Thank you. Amagyana timirandasya kanan kanan shalakaya chakkurun militam jena tasmai shri gurve namaha. Namo om vishnupadaya krishna pasitaya bhutale shimati bhakti vitanta swamini tinamani. Namaste sarasari devi gauravani pachani nivishesha shunyavadi pashtya chadish. So, thank you for coming along this morning and giving me the opportunity to share something from Srila Prabhupada. Actually, today is the appearance day of Sri Nimbarka Acharya. It's also Tulsi Vivaha, the marriage ceremony of Tulsi, and it's Rasa Yatra. Rasa Yatra is the day of the rasa dance. And Tulsi Vivaha Yagya, I'm not going to say anything about that, but you can find that story in the Puranas, and I think there's a little Tulsi book that tells us how she got married to Lord Vishnu. But I'm going to say a little bit about Nimbarka. I've been requested to say something about him. So if I have my notes somewhere, let me just have a look. I'll attempt to say something about Nimbarka. Let's have a look. Nimbarka Acharya, actually, it's a good day to speak about him because Keshava Kashmiri Pandit is said to have been an incarnation of Nimbarka. He certainly appeared in his line, and he's an acharya in his line. We'll speak about him shortly. So I'm just going to read a little bit about Nimbarka. I put up on there some key points about him. He comes in the Kumara Sampradaya. There are four Sampradayas. One of them descends from the four Kumaras. There lived a great ascetic named Aruna Muni in Vaidurya Patnam. That's in southern India, far south of India. He had a pious wife by the name Jayanti. Sri Nimbarka was born of Aruna Muni and Jayanti Devi. He lived in the 11th century AD. So no one's really sure, but they think around then. At the time of the name giving, the Brahmins gave the boy the name Niyamananda Acharya. He was also known as Aruna Rishi and Hari Priya Acharya. Aruna Muni and Jayanti Devi performed their son's sacred thread ceremony, sent him to Rishikul to learn the Vedas, Vedangas, Darshans, etc. He mastered the scriptures in a short time. He was a mighty genius. We need some of those. People from all parts of India came to see this wonderful boy. When he was in his teens, Lord Brahma, the creator, came to the ashram of Aruna Muni in the disguise of a sannyasi. The sun was about to set. The Muni had been out. The sannyasi asked the wife of the Muni for something to eat, but there was nothing. The food was exhausted. So she remained silent. The sannyasi was about to leave the ashram, and then Nirmandacharya said to his mother, this is Nimbak, "Dear mother, a sannyasi should not be sent away without food. We will have to suffer for violating Atithi Dharma." Atithi Dharma means the uninvited guest should be treated as good as God. He's considered Atithi Narayan. So if someone comes to your door and they're unexpected and they need charity, they must be respected as if they were the Supreme Lord himself. This is Vedic culture. So the mother said, "Dear son, your father has gone out. I have neither fruits nor roots. Moreover, there is no time for me to prepare any food. It is sunset. Sannyasis do not take their meals after sunset." So any sannyasis who are listening, bear that one in mind. And sunset's about 5 o'clock here these days. Nirmanda Acharya said to the sannyasi, "I shall bring quickly roots and fruits from the forest. I guarantee that the sun will not set till you finish your meals." Nirmananda Acharya placed his Sudarshan Chakra on a neem tree in the ashram where it shone like the sun. So he's said to be an incarnation of the Lord Sudarshan Chakra, actually, Nimbarka. He's an Amsamsa incarnation. Brahma, who was in the guise of the sannyasi, was struck with amazement. In a few minutes, Nimbarka returned with roots and fruits and gave them to his mother, who served them to the sannyasi with intense devotion. As soon as the sannyasi finished his meal, Nimbarka removed the Sudarshan Chakra from the neem tree. It was at once pitch dark. One quarter of the night had passed. The sannyasi, who was Brahma, conferred on the boy the name Nimbarka. Neem, meaning neem tree, and arka is the sun, Surya. Since then, he has been called Sri Nimbarka Acharya. So in the Vishnuyana, the spiritual lineage of Nimbarkacharya is given as follows. The sacred Gopal mantra of 18 letters sprang from the lotus mouth of Sri Narayan. It was given to Hamsa Bhagavan. Hamsa Bhagavan, in turn, initiated the Kumaras, who revealed this mantra to Rishi Narad. Narad taught this to his disciple Sri Nimbarka. Nimbarka gave this mantra to his disciple Srinivas Acharya. In the Navadvip Dharma Mahatmyam, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Nimbarka had previously worshipped Lord Shiva in Bilvapaksha, Rudradvip. Lord Shiva appeared before Nimbarka, instructing him to take initiation from the four Kumaras, who were meditating nearby. He received the Radha Krishna mantra and continued living in Navadvip. Following the teachings of the Sanat Kumar Samhita, he worshipped Radha and Krishna with great love. Soon Radha and Krishna appeared before Nimbarka. Then the divine couple displayed their unified form as Lord Chaitanya. Lord Gauranga said, "Nimbarka, in the future, when I begin my Sankirtan movement, I will personally preach the perfect transcendental philosophy of Achincha Beda Abeda Tattva. I will take the essence of the philosophies of Madhva, Ramanuja, Vishnu Swami, and you. From you, Nimbarka, I will take two important principles. One, the necessity of taking shelter of Srimati Radharani, which I've put up here. And two, the high esteem of the Vraj Gopi's love for Sri Krishna." Lord Gauranga disappeared after instructing Nimbarka. Shedding tears of ecstasy, Nimbarka left Navadvip to begin his preaching mission. In Chaitanya Leela, Nimbarka appeared as Keshava Kashmiri and received love of Godhead directly from Nimai Pandit. There are striking similarities between the Gaudiyas and the Nimbarkas. The followers of Nimbarka accept the six forms of surrender, practice the nine limbs of bhakti, and believe in the Das Mula, 10 cardinal points of our philosophy. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, we are his servants, and so on. These are found, you can find them back. Vinod Thakur preaches the Dasamula. They also worship Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. They worship Srimati Radharani as the topmost devotee, and they accept the gopis' love for Krishna as supreme. With beads, bhajans, and kirtans, the Nimbarkas chant their version of the Maha Mantra, which I won't repeat. In Vrindavan, about 1 mile from Govardhan, there is the village of Nimgaon, named after Nimbarka Acharya, who lived there from childhood and later performed bhajan there. Many of Radha Krishna's pastime places in Vrindavan are now maintained by the Nimbarka sect. In Mathura Vrindavan, innumerable devotees follow Nimbarka's path of bhakti. The Sriji Mandir, just off Loi Bazaar in Vrindavan, serves as the center of Nimbarka philosophy. The Nimbarka philosophy is Advaita Vada. I've given you a reference there if you want to read anything about it. Prabhupada mentions it in the Antya Leela 295. I personally don't know the difference between Dvaita Vada and Achincha Beda Beda Tattva. And if anybody here knows it, there's some subtle difference. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that it's incomplete, has something to do with the Lord Satchit Ananda Vigraha, but I don't understand it personally. Dvaita means simultaneously one and different. Nimbarka accepted that the soul is one with and different from. And I'll read one more thing from Srila Prabhupada in connection with Nimbarka and his philosophy. And this is from the Antya Leela 293. The commentary by Srila... I didn't put it up, or I'd have got one of you to read it. I'm sorry, I should have put it on the board. I don't think I did I? No. The commentary by Srila Ramanujacharya, known as Sri Bhasya, establishes the Vishishtadvaita Vada philosophy. So Ramanuja's Vishishtadvaita. Similarly, in the Brahma Sampradaya, Madhvacharya's Purna Pragya Bhasya establishes Shuddhadvaita. So there's a progression in these philosophies, which I shan't bother explaining because I don't know what it is. In the Kumara Sampradaya, or Nimbarka Sampradaya, Sri Nimbarka establishes the philosophy of Dvaita Vada in his book. It's got a name, Parijata Saurabh. And in the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, or Rudra Sampradaya, which comes from Lord Shiva, Vishnu Swami has written a commentary called Sarvagya Bhasya, which establishes Shuddhadvaita Vada. And now Prabhupada says this, a Vaishnava should study the commentaries on the Vedanta Sutra written by the four Sampradaya Acharyas, namely Sri Ramanuj, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami, and Nimbarka. For these commentaries are based upon the philosophy that the Lord is the master and that all living entities are his eternal servants. One interested in studying Vedanta philosophy properly must study these commentaries, especially if he is a Vaishnav. These commentaries are always adored by Vaishnavs. The commentary by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is elaborately given in the Adi Leela, Chapter 7, Text 101. So to find out more about... Actually, Prabhupada doesn't explain the philosophy in his books and, you know, the subtleties and the differences, but his spiritual master has done so, and he gives the reference to that. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has written a commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita, so in that he gives the explanations of these philosophies, so we can find them there. And Prabhupada goes on to say that the Mayavad commentary Sarirak Bhasya is like poison for a Vaishnava. It should not be touched at all. So there's the different commentaries, and one of them, every Acharya gives a commentary on Vedanta to assert his position, and Shankara, his philosophy is Kevala Dvaita, which is unqualified monism. In other words, there's only one. Everything's one, ultimately. So we shouldn't read his commentary, but we should read the others. So that's all I really want to say about Nimbarka. And now I'm going to move on to Srila Prabhupada's purport. Now, the first thing, to go back to the purport, is here Srila Prabhupada starts by telling us that Sri Narottam Das Thakur has sung that the best qualification for taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya is to be the most fallen, because the Lord came specifically to deliver the fallen souls. Now, I understand that to be this. Would someone like to read that verse? One of the amen.
You descended to deliver the fallen and fallen. Then save me soon, my Lord, I pray. No worse wretch was born.
You could have sung that too. You descended to deliver the fallen and forlorn. Then save me soon, my Lord, I pray. No worse wretch was born. That's, it's in the same meter. okay, so, this is Narottam Das Thakur, praising, of course, Lord Chaitanya. And, as Patita Pavan, which means, of course, the savior of the most fallen. So this is what I understand Srila Prabhupada to be referring to in that very first sentence. Now I'm going to try and understand what he's saying here. He says that the best qualification for taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya is to be the most fallen. So, in considering this statement, I thought there were a couple of ways it could be understood. And now one of them is that to take the best qualification is to be the most fallen. Okay, so that means, does that mean that I should endeavor to be as fallen as I possibly can? I'm already quite fallen, but I could probably go a bit lower if I try very hard. So, I thought that, but then, well, that doesn't make sense. He can't be saying that. Then another way it could be understood is that if I am the most fallen, then I'm a candidate for Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So I pondered on that and thought, well, and he goes on to say that in this age, everyone is a meat-eater, drunkard, woman-hunter, and gambler. So, everyone is the most fallen. But it doesn't appear that everyone is necessarily getting Lord Chaitanya's mercy, because not everyone is coming to the Krishna consciousness movement. The sign, I understand, that you've received the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is that you take to the process of Krishna consciousness. But very few people are doing that. So I thought, well, that understanding also doesn't really work. So then I thought, okay, well, what does he mean? And I was thinking, well, of the example of Rupa and Sanatan, that you feel yourself to be the most fallen. Actually, we are fallen, that's a fact. But the mere fact of our being fallen, I don't think is sufficient to attract the Lord. So, I looked at some, this is now from the Adilila, some statements given by Rupa and Sanatan. Now, this is when they first met Lord Chaitanya. At that time, they were Dabir, Kas, and Sakir Malik. Still, they had their Muslim names. So would someone like to read these verses, maybe from the ladies' side? You can just read the English if you can't read the Sanskrit or the Bengali.
No one is more sinful than us, nor is there any offender like us. Even if you want to mention our sinful activities, you immediately become ashamed. And what to speak of giving them up? The two brothers submitted. Dear Lord, you have incarnated to deliver the fallen souls. Do not consider that in this world there is none so fallen as us.
So, this is the mood, as I understand it. They are evincing, demonstrating the mood by which we attract Lord Chaitanya. The mood of humility, of feeling yourself very fallen. In the purport to these verses, in this section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, again, I'll give you the reference. It's at the bottom there. Adi Leela 1, 190. Around there is the section where we find Rupa and Sanatan meeting Lord Chaitanya and expressing these sentiments. And there's quite a few others which are very beautiful. But in the purports, Srila Prabhupada gives us an insight into their mentality. How did they feel themselves so fallen? They were actually born of high-class Brahmin families, and they were very learned scholars, both brothers, and they were posted as ministers in the government, and they were strict vegetarians, of course. They were not like Jagai and Madhai, but we find in this section they were saying that we're lower, we're a million times lower than Jagai and Madhai. So I found that curious, how they could have thought like that, because Jagai and Madhai, as we know, were so very sinful. They were murderers. They were cow killers. They were gamblers. They were rapists. So you can't really get much lower. But still, Rupa and Sanatan are saying they felt themselves to be even lower than Jagai and Madhai. Here's one insight that Prabhupada gives why they felt fallen. If someone would like to read that, want to read it? Anyone who can see it?
The idea is that by accepting the master, one accepts the occupation of the dog. In other words, the dog cannot thrive without having a master. And for the sake of pleasing the master, dogs offend many people. They bark at innocent people just to please the master. Similarly, when one is a servant, he has to perform abominable activities according to the orders of the master. Therefore, when Javiu Kasha and Sakar Malika compared their position to that of Jagai and Madhai, they found Jagai and Madhai's position far better.
Yeah, so is he opening the can? Because they had taken up service. They were Brahmins. Brahmins, in fact, the top three Varnas. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Namram Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Govarni Pachar. I never allowed to accept service. Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas must be independent. Only the Shudra can accept the service of a master. So they'd done that. So they felt, well, we're very degraded. And actually, Jagai and Madhai never did that. Although, whatever else they did, they didn't do that. So, their mentality was like, finding themselves, finding reasons almost like why they were fallen. They felt genuinely in their hearts that they were fallen. I don't know if I put any more. Jagai and Madhai had but one fault. They were addicted to sinful activity. So, okay, that wasn't so great, but it was just only one fault. Otherwise, they hadn't lost their Brahminical status by accepting service from others. They were still considered like that. So Rupa and Sanatan presented themselves as being lower than the two brothers who were delivered by Lord Chaitanya. When they compared themselves to Jagai Madhai, they found themselves inferior because the Lord had no trouble delivering the two drunken brothers. This was so because despite the fact that they were addicted to sin, in other ways their life was brilliant. They belonged to a Brahmin caste, and such Brahmins were pious by nature. Although they had been addicted to some sin due to bad association, those unwanted things could vanish simply because of chanting the holy name of the Lord. Another point for Jagai Madhai was that as members of a Brahmin family, they did not serve anyone. So in this way, these two brothers were feeling themselves fallen. So going back to the purport, I came to the conclusion that not just being fallen, what is the qualification to take shelter? What does it mean to take shelter? That was another thing. I understood that meant to surrender, to accept the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Taking shelter of the lotus feet, what does that mean? I understand it means taking to the process of bhakti, accepting the order of the guru, and following the process of bhakti. So just being a fallen wretch isn't enough for that to happen. There has to be the feeling that I am fallen and that I need shelter, that I'm unable to solve the problems of my own life. So another verse that came to mind as I pondered on this sentence, and also further down in the purport, Prabhupada says that to be puffed up with false learning is a disqualification for accepting the Krishna consciousness movement. So conversely, the opposite of feeling yourself fallen is to feel yourself to be very capable and very learned and a big pundit and so many things. So this is an impediment. This is an obstruction to taking shelter. And the great quality of the Kashmiri pandit was he wasn't like that. He was initially quite proud of his learning, but you know, he had every reason to be because he was so learned. You know, and scholars couldn't possibly defeat him. He could compose 100 Sanskrit verses like the blowing wind about Mother Ganga. Perfect. Oh, well, they weren't perfect because by Mother Sarasvati's mercy, she made him make some mistakes. We've been hearing about that, those who've been coming to the class, to break his pride. Because to break his pride was the greatest mercy. Her real mercy wasn't to give him the ability to defeat scholars and to compose Sanskrit verses and poetry, but her real mercy was to remove his pride. So when she actually made him make mistakes in his compositions, that was when she was being most merciful, because then his pride was crushed. Lord Chaitanya pointed out those mistakes, and he was stunned. But he didn't become angry. He thought, well, he knew that he was depending on a higher power, first of all. He was depending on goddess Sarasvati. And he thought, why has she done this? Why would the goddess do this to me? So he prayed to her, and she revealed the truth. And he was able to accept that, and he took shelter, he surrendered. So he gave up his pride. So in this respect, of course, I thought of this verse. Would someone, one of the ladies, like to read it?
My Lord, your lordship can be the approach, but only by those who are hearing you can go through. Wandering on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectful friendship, great affluence, high education, and body beauty, cannot approach you with your hearing.
Someone like to read the English? This is from the purport. You want to read that one, Balaram Prabhu?
The second paragraph.
Yeah.
A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he is incapable of uttering the name in quality.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So, this was an insight I had that, you know, from that sentence of Srila Prabhupada about, you know, we take shelter when being fallen. And so when we feel ourselves to be fallen, when we have this mood of submission, that we are akinchana gochara. This is materially exhausted. In other words, we're no longer thinking that any material opulence, acquisition, power, recognition, prestige, all the things which we've spent so many lifetimes trying to get, and sometimes getting, but never being satisfied, never really touches the heart and makes us happy, all those things, when we give up striving for that, just like Keshava Kashmiri, he gave up his pride of, oh, I'm Digvijayi scholar and everything. He realized, you know, that this, actually this is not really what I'm searching for, what will make me happy. So when we reach that point, we become Naivahat Yabidatumbai, Twama Kinchana Gotra. This is this verse that we can, with sincere feeling, approach the Lord. And Prabhupada writes this little point here in his purport that we can then utter the holy name with feeling, because that is how we attract Krishna. We can chant with a disconnection just as long as we like. We're never going to attract Krishna. And as long as we're attached to material things, as long as we're wanting something in this world, we're wanting to be seen as a big devotee, we're wanting to be seen as something in this world, then we're not going to make that connection with the holy name. That sincere feeling is not going to come. So we may chant, Prabhupada says, we may utter the holy name, but we're not going to utter it with quality. And this is the real lesson that we get from Keshava Kashmiri. And another thing that came to mind in respect of this, another verse, especially in connection with the Kashmiri Pandit, was this one. And I'll explain it in a second. Would one of the Matajis like to read that? Just the English is fine.
Those who, even while remaining situated in established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge, with their body, words, and mind, offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure qualities, certainly humble your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone in this worldly world.
So, this verse is actually very significant in our philosophy, because there was a famous conversation that took place between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, one of his very intimate associates. And he was asking Ramananda Roy, what is the goal of life? Ramananda, what is the ultimate goal of life? So Ramananda was going through so many things, one after another. Vanashram, giving up the karma yoga, jnana yoga, different things, giving up the results of your work for Krishna, renunciation. And the Lord was saying, no, he was rejecting. Yeah, these are external. And then he got to this point, and the Lord said, yes, this is good. He accepted this, because this is the point of surrender, actually. When we gane prayasam, we give up our the process of speculative knowledge. So that means Prabhupada said to when you approach Guru, you must be like a blank slate. You know, you must be discarding everything you think you know, everything that all your material learning and what you think you understand already about God or anything, you discard that and you accept, you open your heart, you open your mind to Krishna through the spiritual master. So hearing, in other words, is the beginning, Shravanam. It's the beginning of Krishna consciousness. And Keshava Kashmiri, this was his thing, that he was a big pundit, false learning. Prabhupada says this is the impediment, false learning, thinking that we're very scholarly and learned. So when you give that up, and then you jivanti san mukaritam, we hear stane stita shruti katam. So this means you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to give up your position in life. You don't have to become a sannyasi. You don't have to go away from home, give up your job, or anything. Stane stita, you stay where you are, that's okay. But shruti katam, tanuban, you must hear. So this is where it begins. And this is the evidence of surrender, the evidence of taking shelter, which is born of this mood of submission, of this recognition of our fallen condition. I found a very nice, this is quite lengthy, but this is from the Path of Perfection, actually, and Prabhupada commenting on the verse that I just cited. And I think it's worth reading that with anyone there with a strong set of lungs. Okay. Yeah.
In this verse, the words Gyani Prayasam refer to theosophists and philosophers who are trying year after year and life after life to understand God or the absolute truth. Their attempts are like those of the frog in a well, trying to comprehend the vastness of the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Even our attempts to measure outer space are futile, to say nothing of the attempt to measure God. Such attempts are doomed to failure. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam recommends that we abandon all attempts to measure the Supreme. It is completely useless to try to understand God by our limited knowledge. And an intelligent man understands this. An intelligent person understands this. We should become submissive and try to understand that our position is that of a very insignificant segment in this creation. The words Namanta Eva indicate that we are just to become submissive in order to understand the Supreme from a reliable source. And what is that source? San Mukaritam, from the lips of realized souls. Arjuna is understanding God directly from the lips of Krishna. And we have to understand God through the lips of Arjuna or his bona fide representative. We can understand the transcendental nature of God only from a reliable source. That source may be Indian, European, American, Japanese, Hindu, Muslim, or whatever. The circumstances are not important. We just have to try to understand by hearing, and then try to put the process to practice in our daily lives. By becoming submissive, hearing from the right source, and trying to apply the teachings in our daily lives, we can become conquerors of the Supreme. For one who does this, Lord Krishna becomes easily available. Ordinarily, God realization is very difficult, but it is very easy for one who submissively appears. Sruti Gautam.
Thank you, Prabhu. So yes, this is just to sum up then. I understand that going back to the purport, that overall the point here is that when we feel ourselves to be very fallen, we can take shelter of the Lord. With feeling, we can attract the Lord. And take to the Krishna consciousness movement. And the impediment to doing that is to feel ourselves to have something, to be something, to be puffed up, in other words. When we give that up, then we can take shelter. And taking shelter means to hear. It doesn't mean any external changes. It simply means to start hearing from the self-realized soul, as Prabhupada just told us in that section from Path of Perfection. That was, if you want the reference, I can give you after chapter 9, actually, Path of Perfection. So to hear from the self-realized soul and in a submissive mood is the beginning, and that is also the means by which it's the end, because Prabhupada says by that process we can conquer Krishna. Krishna, who's unconquerable, becomes conquered by one who simply submissively hears the messages from the self-realized soul. So this is it, at our fingertips. Prabhupada's books are there. Here they are. Here's his purports. So we have this Krishna right there in front of us if we simply take to that process. So I'm going to stop now. If anyone has any questions or their own thoughts, insights, different understandings, maybe before that, you could maybe reflect. If anyone would like to reflect back what they understood, if I managed to get anything across.